Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and this is going to be a fun one because I have Darren Coyle here for his second time on the podcast. Hey, Darren.
Well, hello, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you here. And I didn't warn you, but you might want to get closer to the mic. I did not test levels before we started.
It's all good. I can get right up in here.
That's good. I'm not even afraid that people heard that. So, this, like I said, this is Darren's second time here because you've been at the festivals twice now. So I'm just going to go over your brief bio as far as relates to the festivals and things that I know about.
Sure.
So back in 2018, you had the feature film Chasing Sunshine at Sherman Oaks Film Festival, pulled in awards, had a great time. You will always be in my heart for wearing the chicken suit to the theater, like, the night before to promote your film.
Oh my God, like, I totally forgot about that.
Did you forget that? I will never forget that because, you know, it just proves that you're a warm-hearted, spirited guy who supports your work. Like, you know, I just, not to bitch about other filmmakers, but some people, like, act like they don't even care if people come to their work.
Well, here's the deal. The day, so our screening, I think, was a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it was probably finishing up the festival. Yeah, it was probably the anchor.
And it was a feature, so there was a short before it. But see, when you have the funny thing is, when you have a short in a festival, you're not super worried about getting butts in the seats because it's you and like 10 other films. All those filmmakers are going to bring their friends and whatnot. So like, you're going to get an audience. But when you're a feature by itself, you've got a theater full of empty seats to fill. And on Saturday, so the day before, I kind of had a mini freak out. And I was like, I don't know if people are going to come. Like, it might just be me and my producer and one of my actors and like a handful of people in the audience. And I was like, that's going to suck. So I got this brilliant idea. So in Chasing Sunshine, there's a scene with a guy in a chicken suit handing out flyers. I still have the chicken suit. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to go Saturday night prime time to one of their 8 o'clock screening, wearing the chicken suit in the lobby and hand out flyers to everyone walking out of the screening to say, hey, if you liked that, come to my screening tomorrow. It was an act of desperation, maybe? I don't know.
I'm going to cover the word desperation, which is, it was an act of caring. Like, you cared. The point is,
yes,
it's a very difficult thing for us to deal with. Look, I care about how things go at the festival screenings. And if when I check, and I even tell people, like, don't look at the ticket numbers. Don't tell me how many people are showing up for each screening. But if I look and if I see a screening of like four shorts, like a block, and like three tickets have sold, I'm like, fucking hell, what can I do? And I just give up and I can't not care. And I send the filmmakers an email and I say, hey, I'm really worried that like you're going to play to an empty house. Yeah. And that's always a bummer.
It is definitely a bummer. And I've played to plenty of an empty house with a couple of my shorts. That sucks. That's no good for anyone. So, yeah. And now come to think of it, I didn't even like okay you with the chicken suit. I just showed up.
You didn't need an okay. And it was all good.
I think the chicken suit had nothing to do with it, but we had a packed house the next day for the screening, which was great.
The chicken suit did have nothing. You just had good support for your film. Sure.
I did a lot of outreach.
And just I think your actors just to did get too, people, right? I think everybody was, had a good attitude.
I was just, just because of the subject matter, of that, it's a comedy, but one of the main characters is a lesbian, so it speaks to the LGBTQ plus audience. So anyone like in LA that I have a friend, you know, who's in that community, one of those communities, I reached out to them. I was like, hey, I need you to show up on Sunday at, you know, at 1 o'clock or whatever. And people did. People came out, and I was super psyched and
it was great. I remember it being a great screening for sure. We're still in the intro portion because so I mentioned the 2018 feature Chasing Sunshine.
Right.
And then a couple of years later, well, and then we did the podcast and you gave me links to some older shorts of yours, Ding Dong and Downward Dog.
Yeah.
Two really funny shorts, really thank good you. And creative and well made.
Thank you.
And then in 2022, you sent Operation Playback over.
Payback. Yep.
Payback.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my brain.
No, that's
fart.
an easy.
Do you hear it too
easy
often?
Mistake. It happens all the time.
I know. Payback. Oh, so anyway, Operation Payback,
yes.
which is a kick-ass. I mean, it's fair to call it an action comedy, right? It's got the action feel.
Sure.
I mean, you did some really great direction, and your cinematographer was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Hats off to my cinematographer, Chris. If you're listening, thank you so much.
Yeah.
He's a friend, and he worked for Friend Prices, which is always nice. And I was actually just talking to someone about this the other day. We were talking about the next short film we're going to make or whatever, and talking about like what our budget was for crew and what have you. And I was like, well, I had a really good situation there for that one. It was a 1-day shoot. My friend Chris, I was like, hey, I've got this stupid idea. I want to film this thing. I've got a bunch of equipment already and stuff. So I was like, but if I DP it, it's going to look like crap. I was like, I would really love it if you could come on board and just do this 1-day thing. And he was like, absolutely, let's do it. He loves doing that stuff. So I was able to talk him into lending his services for pretty cheap.
For sure. And yeah, and it is very cinematic film. So yeah, mm-hmm. you wanted to up the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There were a couple of things. They're like, I approach all my projects and especially shorts as a learning experience. Like you're gonna have some successes, but you're also gonna have some failures where you made a mistake and you have to live with it sometimes. And then every time you see that short, you don't see all the good stuff. You just see that one thing that you wish you had done differently, but you didn't. And now you're living with it and all that kind of stuff. So I'd like to think that in my past projects, I learned a couple of things. And so for this, for Operation Payback, there were a couple of things very specifically that I wanted to make sure I did right. Or not right, quote unquote, but just like a better way than I had done it in the past.
Right, you want to show, in a way, show yourself that you learned from the previous experiences.
Yeah.
I won't use that mistake word. You didn't learn from your mistake. You just saw what you did and you said, okay, I see ways to do that better.
Yeah. I mean, the tough thing is you learn more from failure than you do from success. So I learn a lot because there's a lot of failures, you know, and it's just, that's the way it goes.
Well, filmmaking is so expansive. There's so many moving parts and so much dimension. Like, yeah, it's always interesting for me when someone keeps coming back with films, because one thing you always notice is by the second or third one, they're finally discovering how important sound is.
Oh yeah. Right.
Right. But like when people are like, when it's their first or second film
and they're like,
most people just care about picture and like sound is an afterthought.
And they're like, oh, my brother, Bob, he can hold the boom. It's fine. And you're like, no. You have
There's
to spend
a mic built into this camera. We could just go with that.
Yeah, I know. Right. And it's like, no. Sound is one of the places you need to spend money on because nothing will scream amateur more to your audience than bad sound.
I remember a film studies professor saying, if your sound is bad, people say it's poorly edited.
Huh.
He's
that's
like,
funny.
But yeah, it's just like audiences rarely know the sound is what's bothering them. But if it's not good.
All right, so wait,
last piece of this introduction.
Yeah.
We're now at 9:30 and I'm still introducing you. No, I just wanted to say, normally this podcast, if you're a regular listener, we go deep into someone's past, but Darren was on, get this, April 2nd, 2020 is when episode 127 of this podcast was released featuring Darren Coyle. And now you're going to be like number 400 and something. So there's been 300 of these since you were last year.
Wow.
nuts.
Good for you.
It shows a lack of wisdom that I won't stop. But anyway, okay, so now we're fully introduced. And I think there's kind of a kismet going on because I think, so obviously April 2020, it was the first.
The world was going to shit.
It was like within the first month of lockdown, actually, right? Because lockdown started March 15th.
Yeah.
So we probably recorded that. And I remember we recorded it virtually because of COVID.
Right.
And we probably thought, well, you know, in about 2-3 months, the world will go back to normal.
I honestly did. I was thinking that. I was like, oh, let's just ride this out for a couple months. And I think it was like in the middle of the summer is when I started to go, you know what? This isn't going to be a couple of months.
This isn't. I know. Heck, we thought Film Invasion, right, is always Film Invasion Los Angeles is always in June. And, you know, and we and March 15th is the final deadline. Mm-hmm. So the final deadline and then the world shut down. I'm like, well, it's all right. It's we'll be fine by June. Not even. We weren't even fine the following June. It wasn't until
November
2021, we finally got back in the theater. But
So
I was going to say, I think when you were talking, you must have been on in April 2020 after being at the festival in 2018 because you were getting ready to release Chasing Sunshine.
Yeah, yeah. We were really trying to do like a grassroots campaign on social media. And I was doing my best to get on as many podcasts as possible. And I was trying to do the same for our two leads, Trevor and Cassie. I mean, that was the idea that's how we were going to get the word out. And hopefully it would spread just kind of virally on its own. I didn't expect it to be some sort of amazing blockbuster, you know, thing, but like we didn't really have any money budgeted to advertise or anything, so it was like if we're going to be able to do it in any way, shape, or form, this is how it's gonna happen, by just reaching out to anyone and everyone that you know in the media and saying, hey, do you have a spot for me to come and talk about my movie?
Yeah, and you had released it VOD on Vimeo, right?
Yeah.
I think you're one of the reasons why I learned that Vimeo had VOD.
It was fairly new at that point. And Vimeo On Demand is pretty awesome in that they will host your movie, but you can have the link or the website, you know, the link can be like chasingsunshinemovie.com. You click on that, and it'll send you to Vimeo, to your Vimeo page, which was cool. Don't do that now because it's not live there anymore. Because this is we're talking like 3 years ago. Now it is very soon going to be on a bunch of different streaming platforms that we are literally currently right now getting on through an aggregator called Film Hub. And if you are an independent filmmaker and don't know Film Hub, you should check it out because they're kind of like a bridge or a conduit, if you will, or an aggregator between the filmmaker, and they have a list of like 100 different platforms that most of them are AVOD, which means they have advertising. So every 8 to 12 minutes, you need to flag a place for them to put ads.
Yeah, if you don't, they could totally cut right in the middle of a word, well, even, right?
That's part of their tech specs. They say, you need to tell us where to put them. And it's best to, like, obviously to have them, like, at the end of a scene or, you know, between scenes and stuff like that, as opposed to in the middle of one. So I'm not sure how we got onto this, but...
Well, I actually have an observation. I don't mean to be anti-indie distributor, but I kind of love the fact that because you self-distributed in 2020, you retained full rights, and in 2023 you can do your own stab again. Whereas, not, I won't name the companies, but I know of a lot of people who, like, you know, sign with an indie distributor and hope for the best, and they don't see a result they want.
Yeah,
and they can't take their own film and do something with it. They have to ask that person for that company for permission to try AVOD or try, you know, a Vimeo pay, you know, Vimeo VOD or something. Well, it's tricky.
Distribution is something that I don't know much about. And I think most filmmakers don't know much about it. And they're like, well, that's what distributors are for. And so then when they meet a distributor, it's all shrouded in mystery. And the distributor is like, I'm going to go and work my magic and I'll come back in a year with a... with a bag full of money. And the filmmaker's like, great. And then, like, they never hear from ever again.
No, you get a couple reports. You get reports and things, and, you know, it's in the end, it's hopefully the film gets seen.
Yeah.
But they even, obviously at that level, they're counting. They say, well, you should do some marketing. You should.
I know.
Your film's on Tubi. You should market it.
Right.
And it's like, oh, so yeah, no one else is going to do anything. It's kind of.
Yeah.
It's just barely not self-distribution.
Because most distributors don't advertise it or anything like that. They just get it onto these other platforms or anything like that. And then it's up to you, the filmmaker, to drive traffic towards it. And it's like, well, if you're going to do all that fucking work anyways, then forget about the distributor and the 40% that he takes or whatever. And just there are ways to do it now on your own. You just have to educate yourself and put in the hours to like figure it out. And if you're not,
although
that,
film hubs are a really great cheat on that too, right? It gets you a lot of platforms.
It does, and they do some of the work, but some of the work you still have to do yourself.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's all kinds of like assets that you have to like put it all together and put it on there and upload it to their.
For sure, assets. Oh, I know, man.
Yeah,
and by assets, we're talking about still photos and a poster, and like you always had a nice poster, but
yeah.
Oh man, it always breaks my heart when an indie filmmaker, like you ask for a still and they send you something that like just doesn't represent the film and doesn't look good. And I'm like, whoa, I kind of want to go through your film now and do a freeze frame on at home so that I can promote you for the festival better. Like
right.
I want a better image for your film just on the film festival website.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
It is tricky.
Yeah, because obviously, if you're a talented filmmaker, it doesn't mean you know anything about how to market your work. So,
it's one thing to make a good film. It's another thing to be able to package it in a way that is digestible to other people and that will, like, make, besides your family and friends, obviously, like, to get strangers to look at the poster or whatever, or to read your logline and go, huh, that sounds pretty interesting. I want to check that out. Not that I'm any kind of like expert on it.
No, but you have the drive to learn and to try.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to fail sometimes too. But
yeah, this is another one. Yeah. You'll probably say you can be on the podcast in another 2 or 3 years and go, all right, so now I've really learned this whole distribution thing. Now I'm on top of it.
Yeah. Right.
it's just so funny. It's tough. But that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast is because. Mm-hmm. I just thank the universe that there's people like yourself who are creating and putting stuff out there, because I love storytelling. I love storytellers. And you know, you don't get that much quality stuff out of the big corporations anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to like totally like, you know, I'll go to, you know, I don't go to the Mission Impossible stuff. I'm like, I don't need to see that. And they don't need me to go, by the way. They're doing fine without my dollars.
They're doing
just fine. But yeah. I'm like, I actually want a story that I can't tell you the whole plot line in the first 5 minutes and what the final scene's going to be.
Mm. Well, speaking of making things and putting them out there, like this short, Operation Payback, that was actually, we filmed it in October of 2021. It was right when it was seeming like the pandemic was over and everyone was like going back to restaurants and things were opening back up and everyone was like, oh, yay. And so I was like, oh, I have this idea for this short. I want to do it. I wrote it. I showed it to a friend of mine. He gave me some notes and I was like, oh, I want to do this. This is like, you know, like kicking the cobwebs off, so to speak, because we'd all been inside for 18 months. And now I was like, I just want to do something, please. Something that's amusing to those making it and those watching it. And then like Omicron came out and everyone started to freak out and it was like, oh, no, we're not done with the pandemic. Sorry.
Yeah. And everyone had to do Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. And then there was that huge surge.
Yeah.
Huge surge.
So we shot this in one day in October of 2021. And I'm kind of lucky that we were able to do it because I mean, everyone in the cast and crew got tested the day before, so everyone was cool. We also like made it so that all the scenes, none of the scenes had people more than 6 feet close to one another. And if your audience watches the film, they'll understand what that means. But there's no love scenes. No one's hugging. It was like all the scenes are like people are more than 6 feet away from one another. We shot it in one day so that like if people were and mostly outside and stuff like that. So it was really one of those things where it was just like we really wanted to just make something. And we had the opportunity and we did it. And I think it came out pretty good.
You had a fairly kick-ass festival run, so that I think that backs up that it was pretty damn good. And what's funny is one of the great things about Operation Payback, I think, is the spirit of it. And you're kind of giving me the idea that like that was part of the spirit of just getting to work again.
Yeah.
Like I bet all your actors were just delighted to like
acting. Oh yeah.
Because everyone looks like they're having fun.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, that's, I think, one of the secrets about making a shoestring budget indie short is you have to make it easy for your cast and crew to want to do it. Like, regardless of the fact that it's a great script or whatever, you need to, like, make it palatable for your cast and crew so that so it's easy for them to say yes to the shitty rate that you're about to pay them or the no rate that you're about to not pay them. So like, you know, you just do it in one day, maybe 2 days, try to do it over the weekend, keep your day to less than 12 hours, you know,
feed them good,
make it a nice environment so that people are actually having fun instead of, because they have their job, you know, especially your crew. They work on like commercials and shit like that, and that soulless stuff that like
is not amusing. Hours, feeling like a teamster,
and they get paid for it, but that's a job. You wanted to make this like fun. Now your sound guy is probably not going to be having fun. It's been my experience. You gotta pay your money for your sound guy, and you don't have to make it fun for your sound guy. You're paying him, but everybody else, you just gotta. I feel that you just gotta like make it fun.
That's true, and right, yeah, because you're a cinematographer. They can have fun, be experimental, and like try things. But the sound person, like if the sound person says, "I'm gonna try putting a milk carton over the mic." I just want to see how that's going to sound. Like, yeah, no, right. no, they're not supposed to experiment. They've got, and they're going to get like an angry email if you don't hear the actors well and whatnot. So yeah, that's true. There's no fucking around with sound.
There's no fucking around with sound.
Yeah, you can fuck around with everything else because you can like,
try things,
try this, try that, try this. Yeah. Yeah.
And this was another. I spoke earlier about like learning lessons and learning them the hard way. There was a couple of things that I really wanted to be sure to do on this short. And because, all right, so for Chasing Sunshine, feature film that we shot in 2017, we were doing festivals in 2018 and 2019. I know for a fact there's one big festival in LA that I won't name, but they're very pro indie. And I was like, this is going to be perfect for their festival. And it's a well-attended festival. It's very well-respected and blah, blah, blah. We didn't get in. And I was a little pissy about it. And I was like, why didn't we get in? Blah, blah, blah. And I know a friend who knows the programmers and blah, blah, blah. I said, can you just find out what they didn't like about it? Cause I just want to know. And they said it didn't have enough production value. And I was like, yeah, it's an indie film. It's an indie comedy. It's 90% of it is people just talking, you know,
but also like, production value wise, I would argue against that, by the way, because Chasing Sunshine, you had the smart, well, you were just smart about it because it's an indie feature, but a lot of indie features are a couple people indoors for an hour and a half.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas you're out there and they're basically, you know, on a
Yeah, they're driving all over the place.
On a hunt. Yeah, they're on the treasure hunt. And, mm-hmm. and like, and the scenes are changing, and the locations are all good. And yeah. So it actually has pretty damn good production value for an indie feature.
Well,
as someone who sees hundreds a year.
These folks didn't seem to think so. And so I was like, okay, production value. I got you. And so on this one, I was like, I'm going to put in production value wherever I can. One of the little sneaky deek things that I did was I got a Dana dolly, like a 6-foot Dana dolly. And wherever I could, I had the camera slowly moving during the scene so that an audience may or may not notice that, but it just, it immediately adds production value because it makes the scene visually dynamic.
Yeah, tracking shots are very cinematic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially if you got something in the foreground that goes by you or something like that.
And they're harder to pull off, so it is an accomplishment because, Lord knows. Oh, man, decades ago, I can remember being on an indie set where there was a tracking shot, and to get focus, to get the technical stuff right, and then to have your indie level actors
hit their marks
and stuff, so that everything, it's worth the effort.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally worth the effort. And every film that I make from here on out is definitely going to have that for some of the scenes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And Operation Payback is very kinetic. Like it is on the move.
And then I was like, okay, then I want the opening credits and the closing credits to just look awesome. I was like, I'm actually going to spend some money on these things. And I hired a graphic designer who does this for a living. And I told him what I wanted to do and yada, yada, yada. And so that's why I like the opening graphics and like the closing graphics. Now, keep in mind, this is a 5-minute film. So no one really gives a shit about the closing credits.
But people notice.
But I made them as sexy and as cool as I possibly could think of. And I have had adding production value. And I've honestly had at least one person at every festival that we've gone to mention the closing credits. Like they were like, yeah, the closing credits are like a movie unto themselves. And I was like, okay, added production value. Did we get into that film festival? No.
I was going to ask.
No, we didn't.
Still didn't.
So now I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not going to chase that anymore. I mean, lesson learned, though. Like, add production value wherever and whatever small ways that you can. Yeah, because you got
into 20 others or whatever. Yeah.
So, it didn't hurt us at other festivals. It never hurts. Adding production value is never going to hurt. In any small way you can do it, if you can do it for free or if you can do it just for, a little bit of extra money or whatever, it really pays off, I feel, really pays off in the end. More than just for festivals, but just for an audience to watch it, they go, oh, yeah, this looks like a real movie.
I'm actually going to bare my soul a little as someone who watches nearly 1,500 indie films a year that get submitted to two festivals. And my wife actually watches a lot with me at night, when it's festival season.
God bless her.
I know. I connect this little laptop to the TV. We just go through the submissions for an hour or two a night.
Okay.
Instead of watching Netflix or whatever that night.
Yeah.
And I am judgy about fonts. When you see that first, when a filmmaker gives you a film, if they put the film title up front and it's a bullshit, boring, doesn't look good font, I always say to her, ooh, don't like the font. And most of the time, I'm not saying I don't like the film because of the font, but if the person doesn't get the font right, they don't get the film right. You know what I mean?
It's caring a bad about that. It's first impression.
Right. And that's production value, actually. Even the font of your title.
Yeah.
And a kick-ass font. The other joke now is, not with her, but with other members of the selection jury, is if the first thing you see when it comes up from black is, I'm Jeff Howard. So I should say, a Jeff Howard production of a film by Jeff Howard, you already know it's going to suck too, because that filmmaker is like,
they made that movie to put their name on the screen
twice before you've seen an actor.
Right.
Like, you fade in from black and it's like, Hey mom, here's my name. I've made it. Like,
right.
And like, did you really have to say a Jeff Howard production? Like, couldn't you make up a BS production company name? Like,
right.
Like, you know, J-E-H prods, whatever. But anyway, so that's, but when you mention your credits, the opening credits and stuff, like, I'm like, yeah, it matters.
It's a first impression.
It's the first impression.
And you should not take that lightly. Now, I know some filmmakers will be like, well, once they watch the film, they'll fall in love with the film. And so what does the opening credits matter? I'm like, because that's the first thing they're seeing and hearing. And if it puts them off in any way, or if it like makes them think of something else, if it makes them think, oh, I hate that font, you've lost them. You got now you're in negative digits, and now you got to work to get them back. Wouldn't you want that first impression to be, oh, this is cool. Okay. I'm into this, you know?
And like you're saying, it's first impression. I make a point of, obviously, I'm screening these things on the platform Film Freeway. So, and there's, you know, people type in a cover letter if they want. They can put all this info. I just want to have the experience of someone in the theater. So I hit play. And whatever comes up on that screen, it's up to the filmmaker what I see first and what I learn. If right. they save the title to the end, you know, if you just start in, whatever. I want to be in your hands. Show me what you got.
Right.
Rick and Morty reference, right? But show me what you got. And yeah, it's like, if you show me what you got, if you just start off with something uninteresting, like, I mean, this is just, I mean, it's just like you're the first thing you say to someone on a date. Like, you've got to start well.
Yeah. And also, especially for shorts, I can say this because, I mean, I've seen a lot of shorts as a programmer for your festival. I've seen a lot of shorts, and
that's right. You've done the filmmakers board plenty of times.
And, you know, you'd be like, all right, the movie is 7 minutes long. The opening credits are 45 seconds. And you're like, guys, get to the story. The whole thing is only 7 minutes long. You're just, this is a bad first impression. You're wasting your time. Like, just get to it.
Yeah, it's rare. It would have to be a really good film for that to get through. But yeah, it's, I'm with you 100%. In fact, I think most of the time shorts, if you want, give us the title and then just jump in. You don't need anything besides the title up front. Because yeah, you're talking, unless it's like a 30-minute, 40-minute short, but
yeah, maybe.
Which are now featurettes in our world. But yeah. But yeah, you don't need, you know, to slowly pan down a suburban street and show the name of every actor. It's like, I get it. So
yeah,
those films, I don't think we have many of them at our festivals. But yeah, when it's like that, I'm like, okay, again, it's like, I get it. You want to see your name up there.
Right.
But what you really should want to do is grab your audience and tell them a great story.
Yeah, for sure. Again, because you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, and then show us all the names afterwards, because then I'll be like, oh, I want to know who did that. I want
to
know.
There's a reason why people in general don't like to watch shorts, because a lot of them aren't very good. And so when your friend is like, hey, can you watch my short? You're like, oh, my God, I hope it doesn't suck. There's a lot of pitfalls. There's a lot of pitfalls.
That's about as scary, you know, as will you read my script, right?
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's like, oh, okay. But,
and then when people, like, even in the opening credits, when they say, like, just to use my name, for example, a Darren Coyle film or a film by Darren Coyle, you will never see that in any of my films because that's not my film. It's not a Darren Coyle film. There was a cast and a crew that worked on it. There was an editor that worked on it. Like, I was the director. Okay, sure. I was the writer. Okay, yeah, sure. So you'll see that in the credits, written and directed by Darren Coyle. Absolutely. You'll never see me say a Darren Coyle film, because I just feel like that takes away from all the work that all the other people did put
it
into
does.
It.
It does. And, you know? And it also kind of suggests that you're about your own ego.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
And
like, they made this movie so that they could put a Darren Coyle film.
Well, and if you're the writer director, and well, now I'm bitching about another thing, but if you are the writer and director, those are wonderful credits to have. And then when someone gives themselves executive producer as well, on top of that, I'm like, I probably would have guessed you went out of pocket for this, but you don't have to tell us.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really have to take an executive producer credit on your short.
Yeah.
Just tell us that you wrote and directed it, and we'll respect you.
Right, right. Yeah.
I know. I didn't mean for this to turn into us complaining about filmmakers.
It has. This really has turned into
and smart as you are.
Oh, well, you thank
know?
You.
Because it, I don't know. I like humility.
Nothing more humble inducing than going to a Sunday afternoon screening of your short in a festival, and you walk in, it's a 200 seat theater, and the only people there are you and your wife and the actress from the movie. That has happened. Yeah, and you sit down, you're like, all right, well, this is going to suck. Because, I mean, for me, the whole... filmmaking is a humbling experience. Sure, there's egos, and yeah, it's a lot of fun at times, and it's a lot of work and all that stuff. But, like, especially if you're making independent films, and you're just trying to find a darn audience for them, like, you're getting a slice of humble pie all the time, especially if you're submitting to festivals, you're going to get lots of no's. But that's just the way it goes. And you have to approach it with, you know, humility. Otherwise it's going to be an ugly experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And well, I was going to say deservedly so, but not the situation you talked about where it's just an empty theater. I mean, that's just a lot of things have to go wrong. It's not the filmmaker's fault when that theater is empty.
No,
it's the aggregate of the festival, plus all the people in that block, plus whatever else is going on. Well, thankfully, we haven't had a dead. I'm very grateful. I should find some wood to knock on, but way over here. But yeah, because I think we kind of helped Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Vision LA, like, by having more mixers and getting filmmakers to meet, then I think people support each other more and they come out to each other's screenings. And
yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, like, you know, in a 70, 80 seat theater, if you get like 30, 40 people in there, it just feels good.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're good at like 30. You're like, yeah. Hey, I don't notice the empty seats. I see these people here. Yeah.
Yeah, except, yeah, so sometimes a festival might be in, like, one of those Googleplexes, like an AMC or something like that, and, like, the theater seats 300 people. And, sometimes the crowds are thin. But
yeah, especially if they give you if it's, like, 2 p.m. on a weekday, that's rough.
Yeah. There was another film festival that Operation Payback was in, that I won't name them, but they were like it was like a 2 week long festival. They had screenings on like Tuesday at 10 a.m. And I was like, who the fuck is going to this? I was like, thank God we were not in any of those like really crappy time slots. But it was like the stones that the festival had that they would program that.
Well, it's just they don't care, I guess. I mean, I don't mean to, I guess that's kind of me being selfish boasting. Like, it was funny. Because of COVID, I think almost most festivals have the hybrid element of virtual screenings as well as theatrical. Yeah. And we have that. And a guy who was virtual for the June Film Invasion of this year, he was like, I'd really love to get in the theater. Like, I wouldn't even mind if you gave me, like, you know, a weekday afternoon. I said, we only have evening and weekends. Like, we don't bother renting the theater when people can't attend.
Right.
Like, we learned that after the first year. Like, forget it. You almost get the first half of the day free. You know, like, they charge you as much from 8 p.m. to midnight. It's almost as much as noon to midnight. But who needs that theater on a Wednesday from noon to 8 p.m.? Like, just no one can make it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one can make it. And it's just cruel and unnecessary. Plus, you got to staff it.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Bitching about staff. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Well, what are you working on now? By the way, and when you were talking about all the things you've learned, but also you just have the passion, right? You can't, you just keep storytelling. You keep writing, you keep making films.
Like I have
You've been at it for a while.
So my day job is I'm a television producer. So I still get to scratch that itch, and get paid for it. And there's a lot of creative stuff and writing and stuff that I do. I work mostly in like true crime shows and stuff like that. So there's a fair amount of writing that entails and all that. But like, I started working in TV 19 years ago.
Wow.
And then making movies on the side when I could, using the skills that I learned on the job, and like you run into someone like a DP or whatever who's doesn't have quite the resume, and you go, "Hey, I've got this idea for this short. Do you want to like shoot it?" And like, you know, like in a couple weeks or whatever. And so I've been trying to make whatever projects I can make whenever I'm able to make them. One thing I would say as far as like advice for indie filmmakers is don't wait for your baby. Like we've all got our baby. You've written a feature film or a short that like that's your movie and you want to make it, but like it's going to cost a lot of money. And so it just sits in a drawer and you're waiting and waiting. And after years and years and years, maybe you're going to make it, but maybe you're not. And so like, don't wait to make your baby. Make the projects you can make. And as you go along, maybe they're not going to be great. Maybe they're not going to be your baby or anything like that, but like you'll learn from them as you go. Maybe no one has to see them if they suck, but like you'll amass a body of work while you're trying to make your baby. And that's what I've tried to do over the years, is that when I have an opportunity to make something, whether it's a 20-minute short or a 2-minute short or whatever, do you shoot it in your living room or do you shoot it at your buddy's house or do you shoot it at the top of the Empire State Building, you know, and try to do it on the sly or whatever, but like make whatever you can make along the way. And sooner or later you will make something that's halfway decent, hopefully. And that you want to show other people.
Yeah, I think your analogy, the baby analogy, is pretty rock solid because, you know, if you wait for the perfect time to have a kid, you'll wait forever. Like there's always a reason. There's always a reason in life to hesitate with things, with huge decisions. So, yeah, you're right. Just you at some point, you're either going to be the person who, you know, maybe when you retire, you're like, "Oh, I had all these ideas. I never, you know what I mean? Like, you've just got to go for it."
Yeah. Don't be that guy at the end of the bar that says, "Oh, I got a great idea for a screenplay." No one cares, dude.
Well, so they don't have a good idea.
Yeah. It's like, well, then if it's such a good idea, then you should write it. You should go and write it. And I support you in doing that.
I tell you, I could have put that Spielberg to shame if I'd only had the chance. Like, no, you needed to do something. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the way, the true crime thing, that was a good thing to be in for the last decade, right? It just keeps growing and growing, that genre.
Yeah. I started in it when I was living in DC, in like 2011. I kind of fell ass backwards into it. Actually, I'd been working like reality TV shows and like home makeover shows, those kinds of things, and moved to DC, and most of what they make in DC is like news or politics or true crime and documentaries, of course, but like documentaries don't really pay. So I started working in true crime and I ended up liking it. And I worked kind of permalance at this one company for 4 years and I kind of cut my teeth there. And then once I moved out to LA, still stayed working in it. And it's a good job that I legitimately enjoyed doing.
That's fantastic.
So,
and it kind of inspires your work in a way. I mean, Chasing Sunshine, I don't see any true crime element.
No.
But I think Ding Dong and Operation Payback, there's a criminal element in a
way.
But crime has always been storied.
Well, also, regardless of content, story is story. So whether you're telling a comedy or a drama or a mystery or whatever, story is story. And nothing that you do, to keep exercising those muscles, so that you don't slough off. But also, producing TV shows, you have to think about budget, and you have to think about scheduling, and you have to make deadlines. You can't go, we didn't make that deadline, big deal, no worries. It's like, no, the network needs it. So you have to, there's a lot of processes and skills that translate into...
And working with others, working with creatives, working with tech people.
Yeah, working with crews, getting to... Maybe you're not going to know everything about editing, and you're not going to jump on an Avid and start editing or whatever, but you can at least speak intelligently to your editor because you know part of the process. That's why I say make whatever you can whenever you can, because you're going to be learning as you go, and making things introduces you to other people, and those other people are making things, and maybe not tomorrow, maybe not next month, but maybe 2 years from now, that guy's going to call you up and go, "Hey, remember we met at the blah, 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 or maybe we worked on that short together. I'm doing this thing. I was thinking maybe you could help me produce it or whatever." I mean, these things actually happen. So I guess I'm rambling here. I am meandering from left
to right. And one of the things, look, as a festival programmer, one of the things I love is when I see a filmmaker again and they're like, "Hey, I just made something. And I collaborated with someone I met at the festival."
Cool.
People who meet at festivals, they actually do work together. It's neat.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the right word to use? It is. It's very cool.
Neat.
It is
neat. That's one of the things that I like about festivals, and thank God we have in-person festivals again, because you go and you see it in front of an audience full of strangers that don't owe you a darn thing. So whether they like it or not is completely up to your film. Then afterwards, you can have a Q&A, and then you go to a mixer and you meet other filmmakers, you see their films and you see what they're doing. You see what other people are doing. That's 90% of a film festival for me. I'm not looking, your short isn't going to find a distributor or anything like that. But it might actually come across a project like yours, Discover Indie Film, that you might get picked up and it might actually get a chance to find an audience. So, those are the things that I like about festivals. I don't really care about laurels or anything like that. It doesn't really matter.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. No, and the experience in the community, right? It forms a community.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah. Well, I think you're aware. Yeah. We just, after filmmakers saying this to me over and over for the last couple of years, we're finally just going to do a monthly mixer because everyone's like, "We really love the mixers."
Oh, right.
You just do mixers in between festivals. And I'm like, "How much time do you think I have?" but then a couple filmmakers stepped up and they formed a little committee to run them.
Nice.
I was like, "Bravo. I love young, enthusiastic people."
Yes. Yeah, that's great. And I just went to the mixer this past...
You were there?
Wednesday?
Yeah. It was Thursday. It was Thursday.
Thursday.
A couple nights ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... Well, now I'm going to sound like a grumpy old man, but that place was hip and loud and crowded.
It was.
And to me, those are three bad words.
Well, here's the other thing about being an independent filmmaker is that you, as much as we might dread meeting new people or being in those situations where you have to just walk up to someone and go, "Hi, I'm Darren. What's your name? What kind of films do you make?" But and you kind of dread going to them. But then once you show up, and once you start talking to other people, you're like, "Oh, this is fine." And you actually do meet other filmmakers that you can collaborate with, or Maybe they read your screenplay and give you notes and feedback or whatever. But that is literally the way it happens, especially in Los Angeles, being such a studio-run, studio-oriented town. If you're going to be an independent filmmaker, you got to get out there in the indie community and talk to people, because it is about that community and about networking and about calling in favors. And I'll work on your film if you work on my film and that kind of a thing. So you got to have to just, like, you know, bite the bullet and go to those mixers.
You kind of do. You kind of do. And I don't know. This is, I don't know, maybe I'm just too snobby, but also at least there's a little bit of gatekeeping, just that everyone's an official selection at a fairly selective festival.
Yeah.
Like, if it were just open to the public, so to speak, and anyone could show up, it'd be like, I don't know why I don't like that idea, but you know, I guess because I met so many people when I was younger who were like, well, I'm a writer, and then they, you know, it'd be like a fifth grader wrote it, you know?
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, you definitely need to, it has to be curated a little bit as far as who gets invited to them and whatever. But I think given your track record over the years, I mean, you know, plenty of filmmakers and, you know, writers, directors and stuff that you can fill the room with quality people
and plus enthusiastic people. Right. Because like people like yourself who've been on the filmmakers board and watched other people's films. Cause you know, that's one chip on my shoulder when filmmakers don't care about watching other people's work.
Yeah.
I'm like, shouldn't you be eager to watch other people's work so that you can just, you know, put your finger on the pulse and maybe be inspired, or maybe, you know, you don't necessarily see something you want to steal, but something you might want to be inspired by to do in another way. But yeah, I just think I never understood people who are like, no, I don't really have time to watch other people's movies. I'm just, you know, I'm just going to make my film. I'm going to come to my screening and then go home.
Yeah.
Like, the heck? But anyway, do you have I was going to ask you a while back. It seems like, you know, do you have a pile of scripts and then you just wait for the right moment for one? Or are you always, are you writing a lot when the muse strikes?
So over the years, I've written a bunch of scripts. Some of them will never see the light of day. Some of them are works in progress. Also, one thing I would advise independent filmmakers to do is to join a screenwriting group. I go to a screenwriting group every Tuesday night, and it has actors and writers. So the actors read the script, and then the writers discuss it and give notes, you know, critique. And it's great. And it also kicks you in the butt to, like, keep writing, because you want to bring it to the group and get some feedback on it. And it's always, you know, a positive, you got to find the right group, because some, I'm sure, are just a bunch of assholes who want to judge you. But the group that I'm in are actually very supportive. And even if something isn't really working or whatever, then they give constructive criticism. They don't tear you down. They just say, all right, well, this isn't working for me, and here's why, A, B, and C. And so that keeps juices flowing, and that keeps me working to write scripts when I have the time. Which is easier said than done, I know, but,
yeah, especially cause you work in TV and that's long hours. Huh?
Yeah. So, but it does, as a filmmaker, it helps to have a bag of tricks, so to speak, or, you know, just a bunch of, a body of work, so to speak, not only the films that you make, but also like screenplays that you might want to make yourself, or maybe someone else is looking for that. Someone really wants to make a horror short that's about clowns, and you're like, holy shit, I wrote one of those 6 years ago. And like, you know, and so you break it out. So to answer your question, I'm trying to always be writing.
Yeah. And in one it's shape, so smart to be part of that group. And besides the inspiration to write, I've been around indie film now for like 30 years and everyone I've ever met who like asked for a tip, I said, if you haven't done it, do a table read. Just listen.
Oh, yeah.
Don't read it yourself. Listen to other people read your words out loud, and it'll be like you've never heard them before.
Yeah, yeah. Because
you learn so much more. Like, you get so inspired by that. You realize all these different, all these things that you will want to change, let alone the advice you get from the group. Yeah, yeah. It's huge to hear your words out loud.
Yeah, we did two of them for Chasing Sunshine. We did one like 3 months in, and then another one like 3 months later. And just Cassie, one of the stars, has a lot of actor friends, and they were, so we just went over to her house and we all had dinner, and then, and we all read it, and then they all gave me feedback, and it was like invaluable.
Invaluable. That's probably one of the reasons why, because it's a buddy movie, right? Mm-hmm. And it's probably why it feels so natural and believable, because you let the words get life and improve that way.
Yeah.
Cause yeah. I mean, it's the rare writer who sits down and writes just wonderful dialogue that first time around, or even rewrites it.
Oh, you wouldn't want to read the first draft of it by any means. We shot the ninth draft, just so everyone's aware that magic doesn't happen on the first draft.
And when Darren says draft, and I'm just speaking for you now, he actually means a real rewrite, not like a slight polish, like when a writer goes through their script and like, no, I rewrote it, and like, you read it again and you're like, oh, you changed that to there. Like you made a, like, you know, you changed 15 words over 100 pages. Mm. That's not a rewrite.
Right. Right.
It's not even really a polish. Yeah. You've got to like really get in and start changing things to call it a rewrite.
Yeah. Especially, you know, especially when things aren't working. If it's a comedy and each scene isn't funny, then it's not working, you know?
And boy, to hear it out loud and yeah, you can't.
And if no one's laughing,
you can't fake a laugh.
That's no good.
That's my passion for comedy. I think it's because comedy and horror, I think, are so rewarding. I mean, drama too, but because it's an involuntary response, and you just can't fake the scare and you can't fake the laugh,
right.
And it feels good as an audience member to respond involuntarily. I think it's like it's a purge. It's a release.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of horror, but I never thought about it like that, where it's an involuntary reaction.
Well, I watch a lot of horror with my stepdaughter, and she goes, "You overreact. Like I'm only scared because you jump." And I'm like, hey, I hand myself over to the filmmaker. I'm like, scare the shit out of me. And I'm just going to, when the shark appears, I'm going to jump, you know?
Yeah.
What can I say? but yeah. Yeah. Involuntary. Yeah. But a laugh. I mean, that's, come on. Comedy is, I don't know. I don't understand people who don't love comedy. Comedy is like the fruit of the vine, man. We need comedy so badly. That was a rough thing for the, as a festival programmer, God, I'm complaining again. I'm venting to you, is that with COVID, things got pretty serious. And I was like, you know what, everybody? I think you should be making us laugh right now.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why I wanted to make Operation Payback was because it was 2021. The election had happened and COVID was still happening and all this stuff. And I was like, I feel like we could all like use a good laugh. But like people aren't really making comedies these days.
It's a lot fewer
studios. Like
it's a lot fewer right now.
All the new TV shows are all like these dramas and cop shows and stuff like that. Like there's no new sitcoms. Not really.
Yeah.
There's a handful of them.
I loved Beef, but Beef goes from funny to serious by like what, episode 3?
It does. It dips, I mean, it's a good dips in and out. Yeah.
But actually, you know, I would praise that show up and down. I have nothing but praise for it.
Yeah. How's it going?
But I did think it was going to be light and funny after that first episode.
Yeah.
And then like, oh, this is actually the most honest show ever made about depression, I think.
Yeah.
Because like, it actually starts with a suicide attempt.
So, spoiler.
If you haven't watched Beef, fuck you. Anyway, I was just going to be a dumb. No, I won't say that joke. So anyway, anything else you want to share? Do you have something brewing right now? Or like you got your a few scripts targeted for your next
opportunity? I have a feature, and actually the pilot script that it's called Hollywood, Arkansas, that it was in your screenplay competition in 21?
Yeah, I remember seeing you there. But I don't even... Did you surprise me when you showed up, I think? Because I don't even look at the scripts. I don't have time for the scripts.
So. Oh. No, it won Best Comedy Pilot. So, yay. Thank you.
Yes, nice. I don't even get to... See, that's proof that like it wasn't because I like you, because I don't... I mean... I already humble bragged about how many damn movies I have to watch. Yeah. I can't go near the scripts.
Right. No, I hear you. So that script, I'm working with a producer and packaging it. I've got a lookbook for it, and I've submitted it to some other screenplay competitions. So I'm trying to get that kind of in the right hands to see if someone wants to actually make the darn show. And then I've got a feature.
And like you got the Bible and everything? You're like full on series-ish or?
Not like the series Bible. It's more of like a pitch deck.
Right. Like what the first season will be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what actors we think might be interested in the leads and that kind of a thing. And here's the style of it. And here's what the comedy is going to be like. And here's what each episode, here's 10 episodes that would be season one. So that's the pitch deck, and I've got a feature film that I've been working on and off for the last year. I took it to my writing group and they gave me great notes, and so now I feel like I've written the best version of it that I think I can write, and I'm submitting that to some screenplay competitions. And honestly, just trying to maybe get a manager.
So
that I might be able, you know, so that they can kind of try to get me writing on a show or something like that. That's in a perfect world, that's kind of the direction I would go in. Obviously right now with the Writers Guild strike and the SAG strike, you know, nothing is happening. So
we are talking on the day that a hurricane has hit Los Angeles, although we're just getting the edge of it. It's actually kind of chill.
Right.
But we're getting hit by a hurricane during a double strike of WGA is on strike, and then SAG and AFTRA have joined them.
And it's probably not ending anytime soon. So take this time. I'm trying to take this time to
Does that work affects more. The true crime stuff too? Or,
no,
or
I mean, yeah, that you can we're keep. Non-union.
Yeah. So,
across the board. So, and there technically aren't any writers on it. I mean, it's a documentary series. So, I mean, technically what I do is writing, but I'm using other people's words, you know, like I'm putting together the script of people's interviews and stuff.
Yeah. But
like
the producers of that. Yeah. End up being, in fact, I had a friend who was a producer of, E! True Hollywood Stories.
Huh.
And he was, you know, they had whatever, like six producers and each had to do like four episodes a season or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, I honestly got hired because I could write. And they just hire a producer who can also be the writer.
Right.
That's the number one thing you need in a reality or documentary, docu-series type TV producer is a writer.
Yeah. And they just don't call them writers. They just call them a producer.
Yeah.
Or a story producer. If you see someone credited as story producer, that means that they were doing writing, basically. But yeah, so I'm trying to take this time to like write as much as I can so that when things do kind of open up again, you know, you got a body of work. Because like you can give a manager or an agent this, you know, your best script or your baby, and they're going to read it and hopefully they're going to love it. But the next thing they're going to say is, well, what else do you have? And if you say nothing, and that is the end of that conversation, because they want to make money off of you. And if you just have the one script as a writing sample, then they're not going to want to work with you, because you need to know that an agent or a manager looks at you as a writer or as a director as you're their way to make money. And you have to demonstrate to them that you have the skills that are going to make them money. They don't really give a shit about like fancy filmmaking or like, you know, award winning writing or anything like that. They want to make money off of you. So you need to demonstrate that. And if you're not, then they're going to just move on to the next person.
Yeah, no, in fact, you need not even five, like at least 10 things. I used to always joke with people that like when you go into a meeting with producers or a manager or something, but you should always save your best idea for like third. They say, okay, I love this one, blah, blah, blah. I love this one. And then you say, oh, I also have this idea. And then you throw it out and then they can go, oh, I like that one. You've got to like save your best one. Like, yeah, I got to downplay your best script so that they can be like, he didn't even know it, but I could pick the diamond in the rough. You know what I mean?
Like,
that was reverse psychology. Yeah. Okay. I was not that you should gamble your life away on my ideas, but yeah, they love to hear like what else you have. And if you don't hit them with five good ideas right away, or the fact that you have five scripts and you can give the log line for each. And yeah. Like you said,
that is exactly what, Michael Jamin will tell you. I don't know if you know this guy. He's been a writer and showrunner on sitcoms and stuff for the last 20 years. He now has a podcast and he does seminars and stuff like that. I think his Instagram handle is writer Michael Jamin, J-A-M-I-N. And he posts every day. And he posts really good, actionable, like, advice. And I went to one of his webinars and like the main thing he said is, cause this particular webinar was about getting an agent or getting a manager. And he said, don't approach it like that. You're the diamond in the rough and they're going to like nurture your career along or anything like that. He's like, that's the wrong way to think. You have to know that they are looking at you with dollar signs, or if they're not looking at you with dollar signs, that's the problem. And so you need to, you know, march in that direction and work towards making them think that you're going to make them a lot of money. And I know it sounds hollow and.
Well, it's being practical. And, it's practical. It's not. Yeah. It's, I mean, because in the end it is a business.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but honestly, even an art gallery person, if you own an art gallery, you don't look at an artist's work and go, well, no one will buy it, but I'm going to put it on the walls because it's great. You know?
Right. Like, yeah, like, exactly. Yeah,
it has
yeah,
to
no.
be like what yeah. they know their client base. They know how the market is going. And mm-hmm. yeah, look, it's the combination of business and art is a tricky one for everybody. And
oh yeah,
It's frustrating as fuck. And of course, it's why there's strikes going on right now, because the artistic community often gets worked over by the. Yeah, I was on. I'm getting another storm alert. I was like, how come my phone's buzzing with Do Not Disturb on?
Yeah.
Warning us about the flash
floods. Probably
some
flash flood that's going to wipe away your house.
Fortunately, this place was built in 56. So I think. There's got to be worse storms than this one. But anyhow, well, that's great. That's great. I think we actually have hit that magical just over an hour level.
Yeah, it was lovely talking to you. Thank you for having me on.
It's always fun to talk to you.
Did you want to talk about the Discover Indie Film thing you do?
Yeah, sure. Well, you want to talk about it?
Well, you have this Discover Indie Film series. You have this great idea because you run two film festivals and you come across a lot of filmmakers with lots of shorts. And oftentimes after film festivals, a short will just die. It doesn't go anywhere.
They put it on their own website. They put it on YouTube or Vimeo.
Something like that. And they're just giving it away for free.
5 billion videos.
Yeah. So you said, I'm going to approach all these guys and gals and say, hey, I'm going to bundle them all together. I'm going to put them on this channel on Amazon Prime or Amazon. And people can just go and watch a chunk of indie shorts whenever they want. And you've been doing it for a number of years now.
Been doing it for, about 5 years. And season 8 is brewing.
Great. Yeah.
And actually, wait, do you know about the newest thing? Do you know about TV High?
You mentioned it.
I can never stop. I need to stop. There will be nothing after TV High, because at this point, now I don't have enough time for the essentials in life of, like, you know, whatever. But so obviously, yeah, to Discover Indie Film, the TV series, is born out of the podcast. Yeah, because most of the feature people were getting on streaming channels and the shorts just weren't.
Yeah.
And then TV High came about because a fairly big company that does smart TV apps, like apps that run on the smart TV platforms, would always hit me up and go, hey, we're aware of your podcast, we're aware of the TV series, we're aware of the film festivals. Don't you think you should do a smart TV app? And I'd be like, no, I don't think I should do a smart TV app. And then they would call like every 6 months when like a new, I think this company just hires enthusiastic young college grads to just hit the phone list again.
Yeah.
And they would call up. And the last time, year before last, for shits and giggles, on April 20th, we had a night at the theater called THC Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone loved it. And I lost some money. But at least I
got... For everyone at home, that means marijuana.
For everyone at home, that means I wasted a couple hundred dollars to sit in the theater with 60 other people, responsibly stoned, enjoying 90 minutes of shorts that were perfectly curated to watch in that state.
Okay.
And it was wonderful. Actually, like four rows behind me, I heard a voice go, this has to happen again. So we did it again the next year. And on the drive home, I said to my friend, I think you were just at the last THC Cinema because it's fun. But what am I like? You know, if I'm going to like blow $500, I might as well spend it on my wife, right? So, yeah. Although she did come. She doesn't come to the usual festivals, but she came to THC Cinema. Okay. I should not have said that while it's being recorded, but I don't edit these. And so the last time the smart TV app company hit me up, I said, well, what about a smart TV app like THC Cinema where like all the content's perfect to watch when you're stoned? And I kind of like the idea. And everyone I talked to kind of liked the idea. And yeah. So we launched TV High. So it's on Roku, Apple TV, Android TV, Amazon Fire TV, and then iPhone and Android Mobile. And if you search for TV High, TVHI, or if you go to the website, watchtvhigh.com, it's all indie stuff. In fact, I'll talk to you because I think Chasing Sunshine might be kick-ass to watch high.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you're a pink young man. I don't know. So we launched TV High on 420 of this year. And actually, oh my God, in like 2 days, we're finally hitting our big marketing push. But so yeah, yet another platform I've started because I'm like, there's all these good films and people don't see them. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's all, right now it's all indie stuff. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. I'm hoping we get the subscriber base that, and by the way, because I feel like the arts need to be supported and at least in the arts, I'm not a pure socialist, but the arts, I like socialism for the arts. So 50% of all gross receipts are split evenly among all the filmmakers, all the content providers. Each film gets one share. So if you have five films on there, you get five shares. But everyone just takes half of that. It doesn't matter how many times your film was watched or how many times it was completed. If you're contributing to the platform, you share evenly with everybody else.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good.
So,
yeah.
And the funny thing is, well, we're still ramping up, but like during the ramp up, we've gotten to like, you know, several hundred subscribers. So like the first financial quarter, people got like a check for $21. And I'm like, you know, it's only 21 right now. And people are like, are you crazy? Like, I never thought I'd get a $21 check for my indie short.
Right.
Let alone, you know, let alone $20 every... He's like, if it's $20 every 3 months, I'll be happy. I'm like, well, no, I want that to be like bigger. Like,
yeah, of course.
In my heart, I'm praying that like if we can get thousands or tens of thousands of subscribers or even more, like then all of a sudden someone who makes a short like Operation Payback can be like, Well, if it's good for TV High, it'll actually pay for itself and more. Like if indie shorts, I love indie shorts. I love indie features too.
Right.
But yeah, if there's a way for people to actually just not lose, but break even and or, you know, make a little bit, then the doors are just kicked open for people to be creative because it's not the same sacrifice.
Right.
Because right now, right, you really have to sacrifice to make an indie short. You have to, it has to be a total labor of love. And it was at that moment that the very old laptop I was using ran out of hard drive space. I know, really fucked up. My apologies to Darren. We talked for about 10 more minutes and it did not get recorded. It looked like it recorded, but it did not. So my bad, this kind of fail hasn't happened to me for a while. But anyway, what I was about to get Darren to share, I believe, is that you should just go to DarrenCoyle.com, DarrenCoyle.com. And on social media, it's at Darren_W_Coyle. But those will both be clickable links. And I will wrap this thing up. Thank you so much to Darren Coyle for coming in and doing his second Discover Indie Film podcast. If you want to learn more about this podcast and the TV series it gave birth to, just go to discoverindiefilm.com, and on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And be nice. Go on whatever service you're listening to this on and like and subscribe, write a review, be kind. Okay, we also talked about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. Darren was a super sport by wearing the chicken suit there. You can learn more if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. We hold that one every November. This year, I believe it starts November 29th, 2003. It goes on for a solid 5 days. And Film Invasion Los Angeles, we hold every June. So you can learn more about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com. And it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And go to WatchTVHigh.com or go to at WatchTVHigh anywhere. And that's on social media, it's at WatchTVHigh. On the website, you can go to TVHI or TVHIGH. Like, both bases are covered. So anyway, thank you for listening. I hate doing these solo outros. It's so much nicer to do with the filmmaker in front of me, but I had to do it this way because the hard drive filled up. All right, my bad. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you to Darren Coyle for coming in and talking to me.